AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Hello and welcome to the Carolina Panthers Football In My Mind podcast. I'm your host, Luke Farber. And what is in my mind today? Well, here we go, 2025. New Year is almost started for football, and free agency is just a day away officially. Obviously, moves have already started. Guys have been getting released, traded, signed, all that good stuff. So we're going to dive into the off-season news and what we can look forward to from the Panthers. But first, before we get to there, we can't really understand where we're going as well without understanding where we've been. So we're going to go ahead and recap 2024. And I'm actually going to start off with the entire league and kind of my takeaways from the entire season, because there are always lessons to learn from what we see on the football field and what we hear from front offices and locker rooms and all that good stuff. And then after I summarize the league, I'm going to go ahead and dive into the Panthers, and we can figure out how and why this last year went the way it did, and we can look forward to what the offseason has in store for us. So let's get to it. Obviously, last year, let's go ahead and start with free agency. As you know, we're about to start 2025 free agency. Let's look back at 2024 and what were the big signees. And, you know, obviously it starts with the quarterbacks. And the biggest signee, of course, was Kirk Cousins, $100 million all guaranteed man to the Atlanta Falcons, which, you know, according to league pundits and all this sort of stuff, was supposed to put them easily atop our division. You know, because Atlanta has all these weapons on offense. They got Bijan Robinson, they got Drake London, they got Kyle Pitts. And with a good quarterback, Kirk Cousins, as opposed to Desmond Ridder, they were supposed to take off and hit that next level and easily win the South. And we all know how that turned out, especially because we took them out last week of the season. So, you know, in my estimation, I never thought they were the front runners. It was always Tampa Bay. Baker Mayfield's a better quarterback. They have a better defense. They are coached better. There is a more sustained culture of success and winning in Tampa than there is in Atlanta. Tampa has actually won a Super Bowl, actually two. And so, you know, Kirk Cousins obviously didn't even end up being the starter for the full season. They took Michael Penix Jr. in the top 10 of the draft, and he ended up starting the final four or five games of the season, which was really an odd decision, especially since they were atop the division when they made the switch and ended up missing out on the playoffs and the division title because they couldn't get it done down the stretch. So does Atlanta regret their big purchase in free agency? Probably not, just because, you know, it sounds stupid to say, but $100 million to an NFL franchise probably isn't that much. Now, it will hurt them with the salary cap, which us as Panthers fans love to see. Next, obviously, there was Russell Wilson to the Steelers. That was an interesting one given his poor performance in Denver. And actually, the year before, his stats were very good. It didn't result in the win column. And obviously, him and Sean Payton did not get along. So him going to the Steelers was interesting because I think, you know, maybe they were picked ahead of Cleveland in that division, but everybody saw Baltimore and Cincinnati as the front runners. Nobody saw Pittsburgh having as good a year as they did. And really, you know, at this point, everyone's, oh, we need to move on from Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson didn't get it done at the end of the season. And you're right, he didn't. But if you watch the Steelers closely and you don't just box score scout, they just didn't have the dudes. They did not have the horses on offense to put up points with the likes of the Ravens and the Bengals. I mean, the Browns fell flat on their face in that division. But the top of the AFC is legit with all those quarterbacks. You're talking about Mahomes and Allen and Jackson, Burrow. There are more, I'm sure. It did not work out for them in the playoffs, obviously. They did make the playoffs. They weren't quite able to win the division, which I did pick Baltimore to win the division, but I always saw Pittsburgh as a dark horse just because they have done such a good job in the last couple of years in the draft and free agency at solidifying their lines, the solid play on defense. But it was very obvious coming down the stretch that they didn't have the playmakers on offense. Sure, they got George Pickens, but he was injured a lot towards the end of the season, and you can't really count on him as much as other qualified athletes because he seems to be a bit of a head case, gets all these penalties all the time, kind of gets in bickering matches with his coaches and teammates. And I think sometimes you see it affect his production on the field. So anyway, in my opinion, if Pittsburgh wants to take that next step and really challenge Baltimore and eventually Cincinnati, if they can get their shit together, then they need more playmakers. They need better production at running back, tight end, and receiver. So I don't think it's Russell Wilson's fault. Will he be back? It doesn't seem likely, but we'll see. Another big free agent signing, Saquon Barkley to the Eagles. I mean, that was a home run of home runs. And honestly, if he didn't sit out the last week of the division or last week of the season because they were already set in their seeding and their playoff spot, and you can't risk, you know, you're arguably your best offensive player and arguably the NFL MVP getting hurt in the last week of the season just because he wants to break the all-time single-season rushing record. And he would have done it. He would have done it easily. And I would have loved to see that. Unfortunately, we didn't get to see it. However, we did get to see him run ruckshod in the playoffs. And that was incredible. You know, love to see Saquon with a great offensive line get out of his purgatory in New York. Unfortunately, is very similar to CMC getting out of purgatory in Carolina. He went to a good team and all of a sudden was an MVP of the league type impact player. The unfortunate part about running great running backs on bad teams is that even though they can be great, obviously, they can't always affect winning as much if they don't have the support around them. Obviously, we saw that with CMC. I am still a bit bitter that he did not win Offensive Player of the Year over Michael Thomas years ago when he had his 1,000 season. Now, let's be honest about this. There have only been three players ever to do 1,000, and that is Roger Craig, Marshall Faulk, and Christian McCaffrey. And for him not to win Offensive Player of the Year because Michael Thomas set a catch record playing with Drew Brees in an offensive pass-heavy league where all the rules are set up to make the passing game great and let receivers like Michael Thomas and quarterbacks like Drew Brees break all these records. CMC did his 1,000 season without Cam Newton for 14 of the 16 games that year. So give me a break with Michael Thomas winning that award. It should have been CMC's all the way. Anyway, moving on. We also had another good running back in free agency go to Baltimore, which Derrick Henry, King Henry, as it were, you know, after being a beast and the driving force behind Tennessee's offense for the beginning of his career, went and finally played with a great quarterback in Lamar Jackson. And obviously a running quarterback is going to open up lanes for a running back so much more because the defense has to account for Lamar's running ability on every play. And if they have to do that, they're dedicating one defender to Jackson, and they're taking one away from Henry. So, I mean, he had an amazing year. It led to Baltimore having an incredible run. Obviously, they came up short to Buffalo in the playoffs. And Jackson, you know, all year, I was an Allen guy for MVP. But, you know, you look at the stats at the end of the year, and I'm not a big stats guy as opposed to wins guy and impact guy. But it's hard to argue with the stats that Jackson put up. But, of course, he would have never been able to put those stats up without the threat and the execution of a Hall of Fame running back like Derrick Henry. So there were some really, really great running back acquisitions last year, those two in particular. And also, we just saw a lot of running back movement, impact players in free agency, where we haven't seen that in recent years. So, moving beyond the offensive skill position players, obviously, what else? What were the other big impact free agent signings around the league? Well, I'm a little bit biased, but Robert Hunt and Damian Lewis, the Carolina Panthers, helped solidify an absolutely horrendous offensive line. And from what we just saw in the Super Bowl, where the Eagles were able to just manhandle the Chiefs because, I mean, the Eagles have one of the top five, if not the number one defensive line in the NFL right now. However, it's very obvious that the Chiefs have a lower half of the league offensive line. They just aren't up to snuff. And if you don't have the hogs up front on the offensive line, going against a team like that, you have no chance. And that's exactly what we saw in the Super Bowl. So solidifying an offensive line is key to short-term and long-term success for NFL teams. So Robert Hunt, Damian Lewis, offensive guards coming over to Carolina. They secured the offensive line for this team, and which was able to make an impact as the team hit their stride in the second half of the season. Defensive line. Danielle Hunter to the Texans was the big one, obviously, coming from Minnesota. And that really solidified or stacked up the Texans' defensive line. We saw that as they got after the Chargers in the playoffs. They got after the Chiefs in the playoffs. If you have a bunch of dudes up front on the defensive line that you can just roll in and roll out, depth is so key to that position because not only are you not going to tire out your frontline guys, but those backline guys that are going to get in a dozen snaps a game or so, if they can make impact plays on those dozen snaps and also spell the main guys so that they can make better plays on their percentage of snaps, that's what you want. So obviously, Danielle Hunter coming over to the Texans was huge. Another interesting defensive signing, or, you know, we saw off-the-ball linebackers go. We saw Patrick Queen to the Steelers, and coming from the Ravens, which was interesting that you get a top inside linebacker going from one division foe to another, obviously helped solidify that Pittsburgh defense and gave them a shot at the division and eventually got them to the playoffs. And another one we saw make an impact during the regular season and the playoffs was Bobby Wagner to the Commanders. I did not see them getting to the NFC Championship game. I did not see them getting to the playoffs. I mean, I thought it was a possibility with kind of the weakness of their division and the general kind of weakness of the NFC wild card picture. But I think Jaden Daniels blew us all away. And Dan Quinn reminded us of his success that he had in Atlanta as a head coach. So, and we see already that Bobby Wagner is going to be coming back to their team for next season. So they're set up pretty well. You know, eventually he's going to wear down and his age is going to get to him, but it obviously has not happened yet. The biggest DB signing was Stephon Gilmore to the Vikings. Obviously, we would have loved him, seen him come back home to Carolina, but that was not going to happen. He obviously made the right choice if he was going for a winner, because the Vikings ending up the regular season 14-3 and having their defense be a huge part of that, that signing was invaluable. Okay, what were the big trades of the offseason? Well, it's pretty obvious that the biggest trade was Brian Burns from Carolina to New York. Now, the Panthers got got a second and a fifth and another conditional fifth for Brian Burns. I know not a lot of us Panther fans were psyched on the compensation that we got for Burns, especially being considered one of the top of the league type pass rushers, defensive ends. But that's the thing with NFL trades. Unless you've really got a guy at the top of his game, you're not going to be able to get a first round pick for him. I mean, even CMC, we were able to get second, third, fourth, fifth, right? But we couldn't get that first, especially because he had been hurt. Maybe if he hadn't been hurt, we could have gotten that first. And with Brian Burns, if everyone in the league didn't know that we were trying to trade him so that we could get more assets to put around Bryce Young and the offense, we would have been able to get more. But if the whole league knows that you're trying to unload a guy, you're just not going to be able to get very much for him, or at least not as much as you want or think that you should get. However, how did that trade really work out? Well, the Giants went 3-14 and the Panthers went 5-12. So neither was a good team. And we always want to measure success on these trades and free agents on winning, right? That's because that is the ultimate goal. You know, who cares what the kind of stats that the guy put up, but did they win? And no, they didn't win. So sorry, Brian, but the Giants' bad offense was even worse than the Panthers' bad offense. So you just didn't have as many opportunities to get sacks, right? That it's the offense's fault, right? Sorry, I'm ragging on you a little bit just because I didn't like that you wanted to call out the Panthers' offense as the reason why you didn't have production. You know, that's just the way shit goes, man. Other big trades. We had Keenan Allen go from the Chargers to the Bears for a fourth-round pick, which a fourth-round pick is getting better. You know, if you study the league and the draft, most of the starters in the league are made up from the top three rounds. Now, a fourth round is obviously getting close to a third rounder, and you know, it depends on how high that pick is going to be. Obviously, the Chargers made the playoffs, so it's not going to be super high. And Keenan Allen's impact on the Bears didn't lead to many wins. I think what a lot of talk over the offseason with the additions of Keenan Allen and DJ Moore the year before and Roma Dunze through the draft, I mean, those are three legit wide receivers. And so everybody thought that Caleb Williams was going to come in and hit the ground running and just blow up the league from the word go. Obviously, that didn't happen. He, you know, had the most sacks in the league. I think that's the thing. One of the lessons we can learn is that if you don't have an offensive line, especially when you're starting a young or rookie quarterback, you're going to have problems. And especially when you got a guy like Caleb coming in the league who, you know, his improvisational and scrambling skills were touted. You know, very Mahomes-like, if you want to use that term, at least from what a lot of people saw and what I saw at USC. I mean, the guy was incredible. However, that improvisational skill set should always come secondary to in-time, in-rhythm passing game. Because once you break off, you know, you have to have enough experience with your offensive line and your receivers protecting you when the play breaks down, and knowing how to find those openings and knowing how to find your quarterback's eyes. Now, if a quarterback like Williams and like Bryce did his first year is kind of in general sped up because of the poor play of his offensive line and his inexperience in the league, then they're going to exit the pocket and they're going to break the play down themselves before it actually breaks down. And that makes things that much more difficult on the offensive line and receivers, and actually eliminates time for him in a lot of circumstances. So playing in rhythm, on time, and really only using those improvisational skills when it's necessary is really what you want. So I know that the Bears will definitely be looking for Williams to take a step in that, especially with the 68 sacks. So that can help with that, because sacks kill drives. I mean, like that. So obviously, Keenan Allen to the Bears was not a huge impact this past season. We'll see what the impact is moving forward. Then, of course, there was Hassan Reddick from the Eagles to the Jets for a second or third round conditionally. So that's a pretty high pick for a player that they were going to have to re-sign. And of course, if you don't know the drama that, the drama that happened with that trade is that they didn't want to extend him, or they didn't want to extend him like he wanted. So they traded for the guy, and then he still held out. In fact, he held out to the point where he only played 10 games, and he only had two starts in those 10 games, one sack. So, I mean, the Jets have been a dumpster fire for a long time. And this last year was as much that as humanly possible, it seemed. It's funny to me, well, in my personal opinion, them letting Aaron Rodgers go was the first part of, you know, getting clear of that dumpster fire. But of course, they're going to have to do a lot of things right for a long time to become relevant again. And they just haven't shown much capability of doing that. Then we had another pass rusher, Matthew Judon, going from the Patriots to the Falcons for a third-round pick. Pretty good pick. However, in 17 games, he only had 5.5 sacks. Now, the last year when he was playing for the Patriots, even though he got hurt, he had 4 sacks in 4 games. And the two previous years before that, he had 15.5 sacks and 12.5 sacks. So why he didn't perform in Atlanta, you know, I think we can look at, well, you know, we're not in the building, but like I've said before, I think the Falcons, given their signing of Kirk Cousins and then their drafting of Michael Penix and different things that they've done over this last year and in years past, they don't seem to be on the same page. And as Panthers fans, you can see if your team, your front office, your coaching staff, your players are not on the same page, you're not going to have a whole lot of chance to have success. And like we said before, we're handling success as far as wins, and Atlanta fell short of the division, which is the only measure of success that they should have had this last year. They should have been out to win the division, and they failed, even though they were in prime position with a month to go. Looking again at the Jets, because, of course, they traded for Davante Adams from the Raiders for a second.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
For a third round pick, and we know how that worked out. Anyway, let's move on from free agency and trades of 2024, and let's look at the draft. What happened in the draft, and how did it affect the season? Well, anyway, there were a bunch of touted QBs taken early in this draft. Obviously, Caleb Williams first to the Bears, Jaden Daniels second to the Commanders, Drake May third to the Patriots. Other first rounders, we had Michael Penix Jr. to the Falcons, Bo Nix to the Broncos, and J.J. McCarthy to the Vikings. Now, McCarthy had a season-ending injury in the preseason, never got close to the field. Plus, Sam Darnold, the starter there, played out of his mind as a Pro Bowler. So we can just put that aside. Caleb Williams, we already kind of discussed his struggles. Jaden Daniels, man, I don't think anybody saw the Commanders coming the way they did. And for Daniels, everyone's at composure, composure, composure. Nothing rattles this guy. He's always ready to make the next big play, and he almost seemingly always does. And that is very rare for a young player, especially a rookie. And we'll go back to certain things that we've talked about these young quarterbacks coming into the league, is that a lot of times, the more experience they have, the better. So, you know, you're looking at Caleb Williams, who was a 2-3 year starter, I believe. And then you look at Daniels. Daniels started for 6 years from Arizona State to LSU and won a Heisman Trophy. So that experience was invaluable. And same sort of thing going back to Brock Purdy. His experience as a 6 year starter in college football is invaluable. And you look at somebody like Bryce Young. He came in and obviously had the odds stacked against him from certain ways the franchise he went to was set up as, but he had that, you know, 2 year starter experience instead of, you know, these guys that are having 4, 5, 6 as their kind of less touted in the beginning of their career and become big time players as they transfer around and able to gather experience. So that is definitely something to look at. I mean, Bo Nix is the same thing. He started at Auburn and Oregon and was big time at Oregon, especially. Auburn was a bit of a struggle at times, but he was always a big time prospect and had good immediate success in the NFL. And once again, it also matters where you go, the coaching staff, the players you have around you, the offensive line, obviously, and the skill position players. So it was pretty remarkable what some of these guys did in their rookie year. Now let's look at Jaden Daniel, or let's look at the Pro Bowlers. Were there any rookie Pro Bowlers? And yes, Jaden Daniel was a rookie Pro Bowler. First of all, his record was 12-5 as a starter, and obviously went 2-1 in the playoffs as well, which included a victory on the road in Detroit over the number one seed in the NFC. So he had 31 touchdowns to 12 turnovers with 69% completion percentage, which is pretty damn good, you know, as far as completion percentage, touchdown to turnover ratio. And obviously the biggest stat in there is the 12-5 record and the playoff berth and the 2-1 in the playoffs. They almost had a chance at the division, but hey, the Eagles, who won their division, won the Super Bowl. So we're not going to hold that against him. Another rookie Pro Bowler, we had Jared Verse, pass rusher from the Rams. They went 10-7, and they were a division winner. Now, his stats don't blow your mind at 36 tackles and 4.5 sacks, but I was able to watch the Rams play a few different games last year, and the physicality that he played with and how many times I saw him just bowl over an offensive line. I mean, just knock him off his feet. That impact was felt through the screen. I mean, and obviously it was felt on the field. The Rams draft so well. I mean, Les Snead is the GM there, and Sean McVay obviously knows what he's looking for and knows how to coach. But those two Florida State defensive linemen they took in the draft this past year, that's going to set them up for the future. Yeah, sure, they don't have Aaron Donald anymore, but man, they are good at draft and develop. The other rookie Pro Bowler, Brock Bowers, man. He was my guy in the draft last year. I mean, he's been my guy since I saw him dominate as a true freshman at Georgia. When I saw that, I thought he was the best tight end in the country as a true freshman at the best school in the country. And what does he do in his rookie year in the NFL? He's the best tight end in the NFL. He was the one guy with the Panthers' two high second round picks last year that I was, it's like I didn't want him to trade up, but if they were going to trade up for one guy, Brock Bowers was that guy, just because I think he is potential best tight end ever. Like his skill set, the way he runs routes, the way he catches the ball, his competitiveness. And we saw it, obviously. Now, just kind of like the running back, a great tight end isn't always going to result in a whole lot of wins, especially if you don't have much around them. And the Raiders' roster is really challenged right now. I think it was a smart idea to bring Pete Carroll in. I've had an up-close view of him in Seattle over the years, and just like the Rams and Sean McVay, if there's anybody who's great at draft and develop, it's Pete Carroll. So the Raiders are going to need a ton of that if they're going to become relevant again. It's also another reason why I love the hire of Canales last year, is if we can bring some of that draft and develop to the Panthers, which has always kind of been a challenge for us in the history of our franchise. John Fox, those Ron Rivera years, they always wanted to start veterans and play veterans. And there were just so many guys that were young and talented and, in my opinion, in flashes, so ready to be on the field, especially when you look back at Big Money, Charles Johnson, Super Mario Addison. Those guys were ready to get on the field as starters a couple years before they did. And so I love the draft and develop model, is to really, really invest in the growth of your young players. Okay, moving on from the draft, we'll head to the regular season. And what did we see? Let's go with our biggest surprise team in a good way. And it's got to be the Vikings, man. You could say the Commanders, you could say the Steelers, you could say a few others. But the biggest surprise, at least in my mind, I kind of expected something out of the different teams that kind of jumped up. But the biggest surprise for me was definitely the Vikings. I mean, they went 14-3. And Sam Darnold was a huge surprise. I mean, I like the guy. I always thought he had more in his bag than that we got out of him in Carolina. Our coaching, our front office was suspect at the time. We didn't have a whole lot around the guy. I always was a believer that he was better than what he showed. However, did I expect him to come out and set the league on fire and be a Pro Bowler and go 14-3? No, I did not. In fact, his best season as a starter before this was 2019 for the Jets, and he only went 7-6. That's his only winning season. And the rest of his seasons were far below 500. Anyway, he had 36 touchdowns and 16 turnovers. And that is the knock on Darnold, is that he turns the ball over too much. And 16 is a lot of turnovers, but so is 36 touchdowns. So if Sam can continue to develop and continue to get better, and there's no reason why he can't. I mean, we've seen a lot of older quarterbacks in recent years get much better with experience. And there's no reason why he can't, especially with good coaching. It'll be interesting to see where he ends up. I figured he would be back with the Vikings, but we don't know how that's going to turn out. And then, of course, there was Brian Flores in his blitzing defense, who was fifth in points allowed for the league, which for me, I don't know why anybody looks at any other defensive stats besides points allowed to determine the best defenses. It makes no sense. It was like, oh, well, they gave up the least amount of yards. Well, it's like, how many points did they give up? Did they win any games? Because there was a couple years ago where the Panthers were a top five, top 10 defense, and we only won 5 games, because, of course, they measure top defenses in yards allowed, not points allowed. So give me a break with that. Anyway, biggest surprise team in a bad way for me was the Niners. I think looking back on it now, you can look back at the Super Bowl hangover, which seems to be very real for most teams, and the offseason turmoil as far as, everybody wanting new contracts, people getting injured. Shanahan, he didn't quite seem to have, I don't want to say control of the locker room, because you don't want control, but you want cohesion, right? You want to have everybody on the same page. And it did not seem, like the Niners were on the same page. And obviously, then the injuries. Us as Panthers fans this last season, we know about injuries, but they had a huge slew of injuries. Obviously, they lost Brandon Ayuk for the season. Christian McCaffrey didn't play at all. They lost their other backup running backs. Trent Williams spent most of the year out. Their defensive players, obviously, Dre Greenlaw had, torn his Achilles in the Super Bowl the last year, and just nagging injuries for almost everybody. Fred Warner, their all-world linebacker, played the whole season with a broken ankle. So they definitely were bit by the injury bug, the Super Bowl hangover, possibly the locker room culture, who knows. And they couldn't hold a late lead, especially against their division. They had poor special teams. And looking at another stat that we just went over, they were 29th in the NFL in points allowed. And you're just not going to be a very good team if you give up that many points. Now, the 6-11 record was definitely a surprise. Them not making the playoffs was definitely a surprise to me anyway. It's just when I looked at that division before the season started, and you look at the best rosters in the NFL as far as talent level, and they obviously had an upper echelon roster. But when you get hit with injuries and different outside factors, and you just don't play as well, things happen. And there are teams that go from worst to first every year in the NFL, and there are teams that go from first to worst. And that was definitely the Niners. Now, moving on to the biggest surprise player in a good way, and I am definitely a homer on this one, but it's got to be Bryce Young. I'm sorry, but with how bad he was as a rookie and with how bad the Panthers franchise was last year, his second half of the season gives this franchise hope. that we have a guy that knows how to play quarterback at the NFL level. Well, let's kind of break it down. Obviously, he went 4-8 as a starter, which is not good. You know, I'm not going to sugarcoat the not good parts here. 4-8, not a good enough record. Obviously, if he repeats that this next year, that's going to be difficult, right? But the nice thing that you want to see is growth out of a young player, especially at quarterback. And that was the difficult part about last year, is we basically didn't see any growth. And when he started the season 0-2 this year with one touchdown and three turnovers and got benched, he wasn't showing any improvement there either. I mean, I remember his first pass of the year. It was a slant to Diontae Johnson, who is wide open over the middle against New Orleans, and he threw the ball 3 yards over his head, and it was intercepted. And wow, that was a kick in the pants to start the year, especially because I expected to see some growth, especially with, you know, a coach like Canales coming from Pete Carroll, working with quarterbacks and kind of being that whisperer that everybody talks about. So I expected a bit more, but that's the whole thing about new regimes, new coaching staffs, new front offices. Half the roster is new, that it just takes time to gel, to get continuity, to have everything work. I've been experiencing this so much in my own life recently, is just because you put in work every day, that doesn't mean you're going to get results every day. But if you continue to put in that constant work, at some point, the results are going to happen. So Bryce is reinstated midseason, and from midseason on, he obviously goes 4-6 since he started 0-2. So that's a little bit better, but yeah, obviously not a winning record. In that 4-6 stretch, he had 20 touchdowns to 8 turnovers. So the 20 touchdowns in 10 games, obviously that's 2 a game. So that's pretty solid. We'd love to see that uptick. 8 turnovers in 10 games, love to see that go down too. However, if you look at what was around him and the growth that he progressed through that 10-game stretch, there's a lot more to be optimistic about. I mean, first off, his starting 2 wide receivers were 2 rookies. He had a first-round rookie, number 32 overall, Xavier Leggett, who had a really up-and-down rookie season, but that's to be expected. A lot of rookies have up-and-down seasons. Doesn't matter how high they're picked. And then we have Jalen Coker, who was an undrafted rookie free agent, and he was our number 2 for most of the season. That middle stretch, Adam Thielen was hurt, so we didn't have old reliable. Luckily, when he came back, he got that old reliable to add to our 2 rookie wide receivers and a rookie tight end. So we got a second-year quarterback throwing to 3 rookies and a veteran. And the best quarterbacks in the NFL can do more with less. I mean, that's when Cam really took that next step and became that MVP type player, is when Kelvin Benjamin went down in that preseason before 2015, and we're thinking, who's he going to throw the ball to? We got Ted Ginn, Philly Brown, Jericho Cotchery. You know, it was a hodgepodge of what a lot of the league would consider less than wide receivers, maybe not even number 2s. Well, it didn't stop Cam from having an MVP type season, because the best players, especially quarterback, can do more with less. And to see Bryce as a second year player without having any success in his first year and the beginning of his second year, for him to end the season with that type of skill group and to be winning games and to be putting up 30, 40-point games and to be pushing playoff teams and Super Bowl teams to the brink, to overtime, to last-second victories. That's exactly what we want to see as growth out of it. So, moving on, he took 62 sacks as a rookie, and I chronicled our offensive lineman free agent signings that were able to get to solidify that offensive line for him. He only took 29 sacks this year. And one thing I'll hold on that Hall of Famer quarterback Troy Aikman has said is that sacks are a quarterback stat, much more so than they are an offensive line stat. And that was one of the best things to see out of Bryce in his second half growth was his decisiveness and his ability to get rid of the ball on time. And so that was fantastic to see. Now, one of the things that we have to be cautious about, obviously, with that 4-8 record and with our 5-12 record for the season, we're a long way from where we want to be. Obviously, we want to be in the playoffs, we want to win the division, and we want to win the Super Bowl. And we're still a long ways from that. So, as we saw this last year, C.J. Stroud had what some would consider to be the greatest rookie season of a quarterback ever. Well, he came back and struggled a bit his sophomore year. There was a sophomore slump compared to some of the things he was able to do well as a rookie. So, with Bryce having that success finally, or limited success in this season, will the league catch up? Will the league study him a little bit harder? Will they start to take away things? And will he struggle because of it? That's another question to Jaden Daniels and Bo Nix and the little bit of Michael Penix that we saw is, will these guys be able to succeed at a similar level in their sophomore year? Because a lot of guys struggle with certain things in their second season that they didn't in their first. So that is a very big thing, and we'll see how it goes. Next, biggest surprise player in a bad way. I don't know. I couldn't really decide much on this one, but if there was one thing that stood out in my mind that I've just never seen before, it was Anthony Richardson, quarterback for the Colts, who took himself out of the game after a play where he scrambled because he was tired. I've never seen that from a quarterback, especially an NFL quarterback, take themselves out of a game for a play because they were tired, and especially when they're, you know, a running quarterback to begin with. That was just really odd. And I think his teammates and his coaching staff thought so as well. And, you know, they obviously talked to him and whatnot. And he had his time on the bench just like Bryce did this last year. And he also seems to be very injury prone, which as a running quarterback, it's very possible. I mean, unfortunately, that's what ended Cam's career too early, was all the hits and all the injuries. So we wish him health and just, I think, probably want to stay in the game, even if you're a little winded. Who knows? Moving on to the playoffs. Well, the biggest surprise in a good way. Well, the Commanders run to the championship game, obviously. They were one of the surprise teams of the regular season. Them getting to the NFC championship game, especially with a rookie quarterback the way they did, was shocking in a way. I didn't think they had any chance to beat Detroit in Detroit. But of course, when you're the Lions and you turn the ball over five times, even though you have over 500 yards of offense, they were obviously able to do whatever they wanted, except for not turn the ball over. And it's incredible to me that one of their turnovers was a trick play, a pass by a wide receiver. Now, why would you do that in a playoff game that you've already turned the ball over a bunch of times? I don't get it. Anyway, the biggest surprise in a bad way, I thought, was kind of a twofer. And it was two teams that got out-physical that I didn't think they were going to get out-physical. I mean, if you're looking at the Chargers and Jim Harbaugh, that's been his staple no matter where he's been, at Stanford, for the 49ers, at Michigan. He wants the more physical team, especially on the offensive line. He wants to beat you up with the running game. And they just couldn't. They got beat up by the Texans. And I think I underestimated that part of the Texans game. And I think looking at their coach, D'Amico Ryans, it totally makes sense. Also, I thought the Bills getting out-physicaled by the Chiefs was a bit surprising. Now, I know the Chiefs are a very physical team, especially on the defensive line, but for Josh Allen to get stopped on quarterback sneaks multiple times for less than a yard, sometimes less than a foot, that was shocking to me. And unfortunately, I just think the Bills didn't quite have their A game, because if they did have their A game, they would have won that game. You know, I was on the Bills bandwagon all year, though, so I guess that's my bad. Anyway, we all saw the Super Bowl. We all saw what happened to Philly over KC. I had that, by the way. But we'll see what happens this next year. You know, I'm really excited for free agency to start. And this episode went a bit longer than I anticipated. So I'm going to go ahead and recap the Panthers season on the next one. And we'll get that out to you soon. And we'll see what the outlook of 2025 is. Until then, keep pounding.